Hello, welcome to Strange Love of Movies. My name is Livia Martinez, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Oscar and Emily Martinez. And today we are on episode 17 of our Coen Brothers series. This is our penultimate episode, and we are going to be discussing Hail Caesar, which is a film that I hadn't seen in forever. We actually had to watch this for some history class in like eighth grade. So I had like seen clips of it, but I had never fully seen it.
Yes, and this movie is from 2016, so it's fairly recent. They wouldn't have another one until Buster Scruggs, and you'll be hearing about that next week.
Mm-hmm.
And just get right to the plot. It's very similar to a lot of the other movies in that you see almost familiar characters, and it involves a movie studio. They're making a movie. In fact, it starts with a color footage of George Clooney as a Roman centurion, and it's a biblical epic, and he's, you know, just saying all these profound things, and it was in the heyday of the 1950s, early 50s Hollywood, Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur, things like that period, and you think, oh, he comes across as this incredible person, and then you find out, again, this is, we've referenced this earlier, that it's part of Clooney's idiot trilogy. Is this the third movie or the fourth movie? That wouldn't be a trilogy,
would it? I think the fourth.
Well, make it, yeah, that's funny to have a trilogy with four parts.
Yep.
But anyway, but yeah, he's a real dope in this, and he's a lead actor. And he gets involved with some things that he doesn't quite understand, but he wants to understand.
Yeah, I really think that George Clooney has been such a great addition to the Coenverse. Like, he is a later addition, but man, he just does so well with their scripts, and he's okay with like being made fun of.
I know, he's a good sport.
Such a good
and
sport.
This is a good example of, yeah, somebody who is kind of tries to take himself seriously and try, you know, it's like he aspires to being a great actor. But he's obviously not a very bright person.
And not a very good actor.
Yeah, but likable enough. Just like a lot of those characters. It's like you laugh at them because you laugh along with them, I guess.
And,
yeah.
And considering in this film, I think the entirety of the film, he's in character. So he's wearing that breastplate and the wreath on his head. And
so funny.
The sword, you know.
And he really isn't the main character, though, because the main character is Josh Brolin, who I think a few episodes ago for True Grit, we discussed how that was just his only other movie with them besides No Country. But he's also in this. We totally forgot about that.
So he has a trilogy, too.
Yeah, he has a Coen trilogy, and he's really good in this. He plays the fixer of the studio. So he's not like the head honcho or anything like that, but he's just the guy who has to fix everybody's problems.
I think in some ways you can compare this movie to The Player.
Yes.
Because that, I mean, the main character in that is not the fixer. He's actually, I think, head of studio. But similar situation where although in that case, he's almost a villain.
He was in the wrong.
Really, end. Josh Brolin, he's a pretty good guy, but he has to just clean up all these messes, which you get the feeling in old Hollywood, all the stuff that we now read about in the tabloids or on the web about,
yeah,
you know, social media about stars getting into trouble, everything like that was suppressed by
fixers. That is
such
a good point. I've never thought, yeah, you're right. People have never been like more moral or anything like that. It's just like now we know about
everything. Yeah, they've always been the same. And this kind of picks up like 10 years after Bart and Fink, which if you want to hear that episode, it's on our website, strangeloveofmovies.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a link to that pretty easily. And that was all about the creative process in writing a movie, scripting a movie. But it also showed the business side of the movie where, like, no, they just wanted, they talked about art, but they wasn't really, you really need to make money. And the way to make money is to make a movie that everyone's familiar with. And this one, they're making a movie, they're making all sorts of movies, which is pretty cool because within the studio system,
mm-hmm,
on one set there'd be a musical, the other one there'd be a drama, and another one there'd be a comedy.
Very Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, another one, a very sophisticated, which we'll get to in a second, a very sophisticated comedy of sophisticated manners and all that, with a lot of people speaking in British accents, essentially.
But yeah, that makes it serious.
This also picks up on is the situation that Clooney gets involved in involves the Red Scare, that writers who,
mm-hmm,
were
blacklisted.
Yeah, blacklisted. And guess what? They were communists. A lot of them were. And in this case, they make it seem like a social club, like they're just getting together on a regular basis. But what they're doing is they're getting propaganda into the movies. And Hollywood and the nation, they're really scared about it. That's why they called it the Red Scare.
And he was kidnapped and kind of forced to assist them. But because he's who he is, he ends up kind of helping them without even meaning to.
Yeah, George Clooney was just so naive and was like, oh, it'd be cool to be involved in an organization like this, not knowing it at all what is going on.
And since you mentioned Barton Fink, which this probably is the most, I mean, this is the Coen Brothers movie most like Barton Fink.
A lot less dark, though, I
much
think.
Less dark. But, you know, they both kind of seem to center around that, the contrast between the aspiring artists and intellectuals in Hollywood versus the money men or mm-hmm. the people who are out to make money. And I have a feeling the Coen brothers probably have, that's probably something that has interested them throughout their career, because they're good filmmakers and they've received certain accolades, but they don't seem to ever try to take themselves too seriously.
No.
So I can see them kind of sympathizing with the intellectuals in Hollywood, but also kind of being a little, kind of rolling their eyes at some of their pretensions.
That's a very good point. I think that's true. And I think, like, I'm in a screenwriting class right now, and we're allowed to write whatever we want, no matter the budget, obviously, because none of these are actually going to be made. But, like, we've learned some of the rules about how, like, if your script or something takes place in Manhattan or in front of, you know, the Lincoln Memorial or something, they will literally throw it in the garbage if you're, like, just because it's too expensive. Like, the big studio execs, like, they don't care.
That's a supporting actress named Yoko.
Yeah, that was Yoko Derlich's. But, so, like, it's just I think it's very real. Like, the big wig studio execs are the bad guys, but it's because they're also the ones with the money. So, apologies about the barking, guys. We have a new puppy.
She's got a big bark and a big bite.
And a big personality. Don't forget that. But let's talk about some of the intricacies of this film and some of our favorite parts, because it's a weird movie. Like, yes, there's a plot, but, like, mostly it feels like it's divided into different...
Yeah, and Scarlett Johansson's in it.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And you think, oh, my gosh, she's a big star and has been a big star for a while. And she hardly comes out, you know?
I mean, this is her second film with the Coen Brothers
because
she was in The Man Who Wasn't There.
I know, which is pretty amazing. And but we mentioned earlier that the fixer fixes things like a unplanned pregnancy, for instance.
That's just stuff that, like, should not have to be his job.
Yeah,
like, extremely personal things.
And like we mentioned earlier, those things actually did happen in Hollywood, and people would adopt. Oh, they're going to adopt a kid. Turns out they're their own kid. You know, that's actually, if you look it up, you'll find out who that actress was. Yeah, back in the day.
It's so famous.
I think it was a Clark Gable, Loretta Young, maybe. That's like,
okay.
That sounds right.
And she acted like she adopted
it
was actually her child.
Yeah, interesting, really. Right?
Sounds funny.
But that's one of the plots. And then some of the other plots involve one of the underrated performances, because again, the usual suspects, George Clooney, Scarlett Johansson, not really, Josh Brolin we mentioned, but Ralph Fiennes, Jonah Hill's in it.
Is Ralph Fiennes, what other Coen Brothers films has he been in?
Grand Budapest Hotel.
That is Wes Anderson,
I know,
Papa.
I was just testing you.
I know.
I was just testing
you. I don't know if he's been in any other ones.
Maybe he hadn't.
He was great in this. He's great in everything, though.
He is good.
Yeah.
As Tyler would call him, Ralph Phineas.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
Ralph
that is
Phineas.
The way it's spelled.
And Tilda Swinton. And then Channing Tatum, who gives an amazing performance. Why? I mentioned the musicals earlier. One of they show a musical number where he plays a sailor. And they're all
so
dancing
ridiculous.
And they're looking for dames or whatever.
He is such a good dancer.
He was amazing.
I know, he really fit the role perfectly.
Yeah, they don't give him enough credit for that, because they've exiled him to Magic Mike Land. You know, that's all he can do, whatever. But he was a wonderful dancer.
I know, and you always say this, but back in the day, like, actors had to be good at dancing, singing, and acting.
Yeah.
He's one of the few that we have today that is actually good at all three.
Yeah,
well, I don't know about
Ryan Gosling's another one.
Yeah. Yeah, Ryan Gosling, definitely.
Because in the old days, like Jimmy Cagney, that was the thing. He was a song and dance man, but he was also played gangsters.
Yeah. Yeah, think about what you said. They had to be good at acting, singing, and dancing. Now they're not good at any of them. They just come out.
That's true.
They show up for a cameo.
That's
and
true.
Cash their check, whatever. But
speaking of cameos, Frances McDormand also has a cameo.
She's
in this film.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
She's
yes.
back. She hasn't been in like the past few we've talked about.
John Goodman isn't in it, right?
No, neither is Steve Buscemi or who else is
Turturro.
John Turturro.
Yeah, that's right.
But there's a a name that you probably aren't familiar with. His name is Alden Ehrenreich. It just rolls off the tongue, right?
Hey, you may be aware of the Solo disaster, that film.
That was him, right?
Yeah, he was Solo.
It was going to be a big hit, but he's really talented. He was also in Cocaine Bear, by the way.
Oh, was he?
Which we'll have to watch.
We got to watch that.
And he was in Oppenheimer, too.
Yeah, he was good in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, he was the aide who was basically narrating that part of the main part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but
that was the worst part of the movie, but we'll save that for the Oppenheimer podcast.
Yes. Anyway, but he was really good as this Western, this country star. He was a cowboy because he was a real cowboy, and he had this real thick accent, this country accent. And they tried to cast him as this sophisticated British gentleman. If you look, go on our website, because we'll include a link to one of the funniest scenes, of any Coen brother film.
Because
Ralph Fiennes is really sophisticated. He talks so well, you know,
He's this director, and his name is Lawrence Lorentz.
Yes.
Like a very sort of refined English director.
Yeah, yeah. It's a classic comedy routine where the country guy keeps getting his name wrong, and by the end of it, the guy it doesn't matter what his name was. Yeah, call me whatever you want.
Literally.
It was so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really funny scene.
Would that it were, you know.
I know. And yeah, most of the film is actually quite humorous. I don't know. Like, you would think that there'd be parts that dragged or something like that, just because, I don't know, later Coen brother, you could worry, like, their comedies aren't what they used to be. It's very different than, like, Raising Arizona or something like that, but it's still just as funny.
Yeah, it doesn't have the kind of physical humor that some of the other movies have, but it is it is kind of laugh out loud funny at times. And again, the same kind of characters that you can't help but like, but are just kind of ludicrous.
And they're one of the few directors who, like, can actually use, because this movie looks really good. Okay, it only costs $22 million, which isn't a crazy amount, but, like, it looks a lot more expensive. I was going to say they're one of the few directors that use their money well and don't just, like...
I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah, but,
they,
like...
It does not look like a $20 million budget.
No, it looks like $100 million, but, like, they use their budgets really well, and they haven't, like, lost their focus or their point with the money, you know?
Of course, probably they also get the actors cheaper than they normally
Oh, yeah, they might.
So mean, that's where a lot of the budget
Some movies,
goes.
ScarJo and George Clooney are making $20 million. Isn't that absurd? Ridiculous.
Insane.
Well, is there anything else we really want to say about this film? I know we haven't talked about it as much as most.
Well, it's a jumble. It's just like a jumble of... It's almost like you've seen the movie before based on elements of... Because if he's a studio fixer, he's a bit of a private detective, which is one of their favorite characters.
And, yeah, true.
And they've had some very serious noir type, and this is nothing like that. The entire thing is played for laughs, and it's good to see a comedy that, I mean, just a straight-up comedy with no dramatic elements really at all. It's just like they're all playing archetypes of people who actually existed and lived the way they portrayed them.
Mm-hmm. And you know how a lot of their movies do have allusions to either prior films or to like directors and their use of certain elements. But I think the scenes with the little with the communist cell, to me that kind of reminded me of North by Northwest and the Hitchcock. And so I just wonder if we watched it again more carefully, if that was definitely an allusion to that.
Well, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, it probably was. And also I thought where you were going with that was the fantasy sequence. Usually there's at least one fantasy sequence. The entire movie was a fantasy sequence because they were filming them. Like when Scarlett Johansson, she's an aquatic star. Look it up. There was actually somebody who made her living. She was an Olympic swimmer, and she made several movies that were very popular.
There was also an Olympic ice skater who became a movie star.
Really?
Yeah, and was very popular.
Was she a good actress?
No, I don't think so.
No, neither of them are very
good.
But
her films were popular.
And that's what they wanted, right? People to go...
And speaking of illusions, the film that George Clooney is making is titled Hail Caesar, A Tale of the Christ. And the whole thing, it looks like Ben-Hur, Ten Commandments, or something like that. And near the end, they show a clip of the film, and it's just like... So moving
it's
and
so
brilliant,
dramatic,
but it's really not at
so
all.
So serious.
Everyone is just so amazed.
And he's such a dope. And what don't they show the extras on the crosses?
Yes.
They're being crucified and like, do you get a speaking line? Okay, no lunch for you.
Yeah.
Like,
it's terrible.
It's just all business.
Yeah, all business. But no, it's funny. I mean, I think it's worth watching. Again, I wouldn't put it at the top of the list, but if you've seen some of the others, I'm broken record here, but I didn't really think it was that funny the first time I saw it. We've seen it now 2 or 3 times. It gets funnier each time.
Because if you like their sense of humor, if you get their sense of humor, I think you'd really enjoy it.
Do you guys think this or Burn After Reading is better? Because both have like star-studded casts, modern comedies.
I think this one, for the diversity of the acting, like the Channing Tatum dance sequence is just amazing. And even ScarJo's, you know,
whatever she's doing
is kind of funny, you know. Just it's more of a variety.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard for me. I really like both. I love John Malkovich in Burn After Reading.
And I think I probably like that a little bit better, but I'm not sure.
I know. I think they're toe-to-toe, which is a good thing, and it's like good they can still make films like that.
Well, and the other thing, too, getting back to the Josh Brolin character, one of the funniest things, too, is he's a strong Catholic, right? And and he's in confession. How long has it been since your last confession? And he looks at his watch. 3 hours and 10 minutes.
He has so much to cover up.
He's conflicted. Like, how can he remain a good man with all the junk that he sees that he has to handle? You know,
I wonder if they still have fixers like that. I guess those are just like agents.
Agents, probably.
I bet it is handled by the agents.
Yeah, because studios don't like own actors anymore like they used to.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into ratings. How many? Oh man.
Submarines.
Oh, there's a submarine element to this film. Sure. How many submarines would we give Hail Caesar?
I think I'd give it a solid 3.5. Again, I thought it was really funny. If they only made comedies, I probably would give it like maybe a 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
But since if it kind of depends, if the scale is like among Coen Brothers movies, there's some dramas that I would rank higher. So 3.5.
I would also give it a 3.5. It's so funny that this movie comes right after Inside Llewyn Davis. Total opposites. They look totally different. They feel totally different.
My turn.
Yeah, your turn.
Submarines. Out of 5 submarines?
Yes.
You know, I think I'd give it a 4.
Okay.
Because I did enjoy it quite a bit. And I think the variety of the films, if you watch it with a film buff, somebody who knows their cinema history, they can give you all the references. And it was really enjoyable. So I think it's definitely worth the watch.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening to episode 17 of a Coen Brothers series. It's pretty crazy that next week will be our last episode. I don't know why we took on this task, but I'm proud of us. We're almost there. Follow us on Instagram at Strangelove of Media. Visit our website, strangeloveofmovies.com, for some behind-the-scenes content about this film, and also for that scene Dad was referencing. And I hope you guys can all try your best not to get kidnapped by any secret Marxist cells. Bye, guys!